The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host John DePietro.
And here we go, folks. Welcome to the Power Hour. It's John DePietro on this Monday. Here I am. This portion of the program is brought to you by K's. 1013 Cass Avenue in Woonsocket. You know, I love K's. You open up the napkin, and there is the menu. Steak sandwich, roast beef, tuna salad, corned beef, roasted turkey breast. They have a great lounge there. Nachos with cheese. All served, chips, pickles, delicious food. Stop in and see them for a great meal. It's K's, 1013 Cass Avenue in Woonsocket, and you can call them at 762-9675, 762-9675. Well, it's Political Monday, and joining us right now, he is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. We want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John.
Justin, I want to start off with Ted Nesi. I want to give him credit. He had it in his notes over the course of the weekend where he does Ted Nesi's notes. And one of the things that he mentioned is apparently Ken Block, who has been somewhat quiet lately, has not ruled out a third try for governor. And I kind of laid out the groundwork a little bit. Ken Block had started the moderate party and ran in 2010. I believe he needed 6% to stay on the ballot. He did achieve that. That was in that four-way race where it was Chafee won with 36% of the vote, John Robitaille 34% of the vote, Frank Caprio plummeted to 21% of the vote, and then Ken Block at 6% of the vote. Caprio was like 21, 23. And then in 2014, he challenged Alan Fung in the Republican primary. He lost. He has been very, very active. But right now, the moderate party does not have a candidate. And Ted Nesi, in his Nesi's notes, which he posts, the Saturday Morning Post, mentions that Ken Block is not ruling out a third run for governor. And nor is he saying that if that does happen, if he would jump into what would already be a crowded Republican primary where you have Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, you have Representative Patricia Morgan, businessman Giovanni Ferrosi. Block would make that four, but then you do have the moderate party who does have a slot on the ballot. He only got 22% of the vote running as the moderate party, three times better than Block did, almost four times, actually, in 2014. I'd like to hear your thoughts on a Ken Block candidacy and how you think that could, what effect it may, in fact, have on the race.
Well, to begin with the likelihood of his running, I wonder sometimes how these things happen. I get the feeling that Ted keeps an ongoing list of people to check in on, and it's very impressive how thorough he can be. Ted Nesi, that is. And so you almost wonder if he just had it on his list to contact Ken Block and say, what are your thoughts here? Checking in to see if I can get a scoop on something. And Ken just essentially said, well, I haven't ruled anything out. So I'm suspecting Ken isn't actively looking to enter. He's very active and vocal, especially on Facebook. He's building up a big Facebook following. He likes to go after a lot of local issues. He's been prominent with the Board of Elections. But he just... going by that same measure, a few days ago, he said something on Facebook about having this research to do, and he wasn't going to be, he found a research project that interested him, and he wasn't going to be watching too much TV. So those kind of comments make you think maybe he's not necessarily going to run, although, as we learned last time, the moderate party can sneak people in at the nth hour after all the primaries are over. As for the effect of it, that's real hard to say. I've gone back and forth with Ken a few times in the last, I guess it's 8 years now, he adamantly believes that he did not give Rhode Island Lincoln Chafee as governor. He adamantly believes that. I think at best it's a toss-up, and I think that's similar to what we would have this year if he entered the race. I mean, it's hard to game out. At some point, you can't do it so well. If we get one one independent candidate, you could reasonably decide which side that candidate's going to draw from and probably give it to the other side. If you get two, maybe they can even out and you can predict that. But once you start getting three or four candidates in a race, it's almost like just rolling some dice to see who takes what support from whom. I mean, the famous Healy 20% that still claims to be undecided right now, or that's the general assumption, they're up for grabs if Ken Block enters the race. Who knows how that all breaks out, and people make complicated decisions about voting for Matt Brown if Ken Block's in the race, or maybe they'll vote for Gina because of to balance this out with that. I wouldn't hazard to guess. My general instinct, though, as a kind of a good government activist, is it'd be better to start limiting the number of people who jump in for the general election anyway.
I agree with you. It's also hard, Justin. It's hard for Ken Block to justify. I mean, those 6% that voted for him and John Robitaille lost by 2 points, just looking at that 2010 race, I don't see the 6% that went with Block. I don't see that any of them would have gone with Caprio. I guess you could make an argument that, well, he seemed to have a lot of Republican-leaning themes. I guess you could make an argument that then if Chafee and Robitaille split that Block vote of 6%, you know, that would give Chafee 39, Robitaille 37. But the only thing about that just doesn't wash for me is that Chafee was always right around 36%. He never really went too far below that. He never went too far above that. He came out, he was always in the mid-30s. It was an interesting dynamic. I followed it very, very closely. I had all four of them in studio right before the election. And I think I've talked about what was different that time was the Chafee people could see that Robitaille was gaining, because prior to that, every time Link Chafee was in a debate, he would just use it to go after Frank Caprio. And in that particular day that I had them in studio, I think it was the Thursday before the election, Chafee ignored Caprio and spent the whole time attacking John Robitaille. So, I don't know. It would be tough, but if Ken Block is saying, you know, I continue to have my name out there, and he has, in some of the work he's done with the duplication as far as fire protection, you know, he did that report and showed, I mean, it's ridiculous how many fire stations there are in Pawtucket, and they border Lincoln, and a lot of the stuff that he has come out with that has been very, very effective. He could be very compelling, his voice regarding the UHIP problem, which really was kind of his area of expertise, being computer knowledge and certainly, you know, eliminating fraud. I just wonder if with the moderate party definitely on the platform and having a role, if it's just too good for Ken Block to pass up. I don't think he'd go into another Republican primary. You know, I think they thought they were going to win against Cranston Mayor Alan Fung. I remember a Block supporter telling me that it was absolutely guaranteed that he was gonna win that primary, and they were obviously very defeated. If you remember, he then wouldn't even support or talk to Cranston Mayor Alan Fung for, it took him like 2 or 3 weeks before they would even appear together. But as you look at it, if he does see this as like becoming almost a free-for-all, and the threshold to win keeps getting lower and lower, it may be enough to say, you know, maybe the third time is the charm. So, but for the issues that are out there, and if UHIP plays an important element of it, I just wonder if he feels, number one, it would be a chance to kind of revenge at Fung, and number two, if he does see a path to victory, because you still, the moderate party's got to have someone do it. So, like, maybe I started the party, maybe it ought to be me.
It could be. I think the revenge motive might be strong, pretty strong in that case. But I do wonder, because Ken's been very active in issue-based stuff with the Board of Elections. He was a supporter of the idea of a constitutional convention in Rhode Island and advocated in that area. And he's had some good success and done some really good work in that regard. I just wonder if the politics thing, because I can't be the only one who ribs him every now and then, because not only for 2010, but then the moderate party zombie was sort of just walking around there in the political field and arguably gave us Gina Raimondo. So a lot of these issues, at some point, I wonder if he'll say, you know what, let me try to fix stuff rather than messing around here and maybe looking like I have something to do with all of this. I mean, that has to, I just imagine it has to dog him periodically. If he says something about UHIP, you know, anything he's going to attack Gina Raimondo for, well, thank the moderate party, Mr. Moderate Party founder. So I the easier road, and I think the better one for him, given his talents and his resources, is to continue to advocate for good government type stuff, and work on that angle, and not necessarily just get into the nasty political fray. Because as you note, the primary against Fung, whether or not it was, I mean, the bad blood there wasn't just because Ken expected to win. It got kind of dirty, and that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that, and it ought to create a lot of disincentive. It oughtn't to happen that way, but the fact that it does, people, I think, rightly say, you know what, I'm not going to get involved with that. I'm having some success challenging. He's still relevant. He still gets calls from reporters to ask him not only if he's running, but on particular issues, what he thinks about them. That, I think, is probably more incentive to let it cool and watch what happens. It could be at the end, if the Moderate Party is still casting about, he would jump in, partly out of revenge and partly just to save something he created. I would tend to doubt it, but, you know, we'll see.
Well, if you remember, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Good afternoon, everybody, on Facebook Live, brought to you by EliteWirelessRI.com. It's Political Monday. We speak with Justin Katz, who is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Not only was that ugly, it was ugly early, because if you remember, the Fung people, maybe mistakenly, whatever, but they came out with that "don't be a blockhead, vote for Fung," and, you know, Ken Block was wildly offended by that and said that even his daughter was teased at school. And then a lot of Block supporters felt that Fung had made a calculated error, because it was one thing to go after the candidate, but then he was almost, in essence, like disenfranchising and insulting the supporters of Ken Block by referring to them as blockheads. So that was a tough race. That was a bitter race, and the Fung people came out on top. Switching to another one, and again, I'll give him credit, Ted Nesi, his post also had that someone is polling, and one of the things that is tossed out, that Matt Brown, who opened the idea of maybe I'm going to run as a independent or I'm exploring a run for governor, suddenly there's a poll out, and now it's being tossed around that Matt Brown, not only might he run, but he might actually challenge Governor Gina Raimondo in a Democrat primary. What are your thoughts on that, Justin Katz?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with motivations of his that the public just doesn't know yet. I think he's, at this point, we know that he has some interest in at least running, probably holding the office of governor, and he's probably just trying to figure out the best path. GoLocal had a story, I think it's out today, about some of the influential Democrat donors he had in the past when he was Secretary of State. That crowd, he'll be testing them out, and if they're in line with the sort of national Democrats who love Gina Raimondo, they might be telling him your support's going to be kind of dry on this one, at least from the donor class. On the other hand, you might be hearing from grassroots people, you know, we're angry about Bernie and we want you to run in Rhode Island. If that's the case, he might take the lesson from Bernie Sanders trying to run as a Democrat and just say, you know what, I'll do independent and run that way. Or if he finds no support, he won't run at all. But so I think he's just feeling things out right now. And the poll is above all an indication of that. I haven't seen any indication that it asked whether people would support him as an independent versus a Democrat. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But that's what I think he's looking for, his base of support, and that'll probably determine what he wants to do. And of course, we'll find out in the long run whether he is really a true believer who wants to change the world, or if he's trying to gain some leverage for some reason, in which case a primary run might be the better route, because it's less offensive to the candidates, and you can still work with them and get them to work with you to get you to drop out of the race or what have you.
You know, that Go Local piece, that shows me, number one, I mean, my experience with them has been that they are a pay-to-play operation. So the Raimondo people obviously take this serious. That type of story, to me, my impression, but that just reeks of campaign opposition. Someone spoon-fed them that. I wouldn't be surprised. You watch, there'll be some Raimondo ads that will start to, you know, start to show up on that site, and it's like, all right, spend the money and we'll run the story. That's how he operated 2 years ago during that election. But that shows me that the Raimondo people are taking Matt Brown serious. They're trying to cut his legs off a little bit. It's not the worst story, but that someone spoon-fed them enough to give them that to try to rattle him a little, some of his people. But I think that is an interesting dynamic of whether or not, in fact, he would either, his options are pretty simple. Either A, not run. B, run as a Democrat in a primary against her, which he still has time. Or three, if he runs as an independent. He has gone kind of quiet. I follow him on social media. He does go around. He's been going to certain areas where, you know, I believe he was up in Burrville, where, you know, she came under fire from a lot of the people because of the power plant and so forth. He's definitely going towards where his strong points would be and maybe where some of Governor Raimondo's weak points would be. I have not heard him anyway utter anything about UHIP, but it could still be, you know, a little bit off on that. But let me also ask you that. I spoke to him last hour. Joe Trillo, independent for governor, he came out with a statement on Friday where he criticized the owner of Starbucks and said that he should have stood up to what Joe Trillo felt was just a race-related situation of people screaming race when it was really nothing more than a business owner who was like, you got to be a paying customer to use the bathroom, and it would hardly be the first people to ever run into something like that. But what do you make of, again, as much as some people could knock it, and certain people were kind of knocking it on social media, you wonder if Trillo, who has said he's just going to follow the beat of his own drum, and he's staying consistent, he is firing off on something that he feels that maybe a lot of people might feel, but they may not come out and say it.
Yeah, I've wondered about that. I wrote a post about his press release on Ocean State Current, and it's kind of strange, you know. In some ways, it's not, I guess, if you apply the Trump playbook, where, you know, you got the impression he was just watching the news and was issuing statements based off whatever he happened to see that day. That it has that kind of a feel, because there's not all that much relevance to Rhode Island. I mean, we have Starbucks here. But other than that, I don't know. And the story isn't so compelling. I mean, Starbucks is generally seen as a pretty liberal company. So that they would cave to liberal activists is not all that surprising. In fact, in Rhode Island a few years ago, they had the controversy. I think it was at Starbucks where somebody wrote an anti-cop kind of comment on a cop's coffee cup. And he didn't even draw it to that. So it almost seems like sometimes you get the impression people are running to be pundits. You know, they enjoy being able to send out press releases and get attention. There is that floating sense of, you know, you always have to leave open a possibility. Maybe he's got his ear hearing something in the ground that I'm not. You don't get the sense that there's a groundswell of people who are in Rhode Island who they're up in arms and this is the kind of thing that would really get them moving. And to the extent that exists, I'm not sure there's any political calculation locally that puts those people as a majority, which would make this seem a bit more like a play to siphon off some support from other candidates rather than to gain support for himself, because he does open himself up to all kinds of criticism from everywhere, from you know, our future, you know, website, far left website, to more mainstream voices in local media, saying that this is it's a dog whistle. You know, they all get to point at it and say he's just appealing to racism and all that kind of stuff. It gets him some attention, but it doesn't lay the groundwork for him running in a competitive three-way election, especially when, you know, the presumption is that the Trump brand will help him take some of the right-wing vote from Alan Fung. He wouldn't need that. And if he's having to shore that up, which is what this would indicate he thinks he might have to, then he's not doing very well. It's very early to not be doing well. So you would expect him to be going the other way. So I find it somewhat puzzling if his goal is actually to win the election, which may not be his goal anyway.
Folks, we're going to ask Justin to hold on one moment. We're going to be right back with Justin Katz on this Political Monday. Coming up, we are going to talk about Governor Raimondo and some very significant developments last week. But I want to remind you, when your appliance is dying, just call our friend Ryan. Ryan's Appliance Repair. Repairs on all makes and models of appliances, washers, dryers, dishwashers, stove. Are you having a problem with your refrigerator? Call Ryan. Microwave, garbage disposals, washers, dryers, dishwashers, senior citizens discount. Owner owned and operated. Owner Ryan, he's out on every job. Call Ryan's Appliance Repair at 401-710-7096. 710-7096. All work is guaranteed for 90 days, parts and labor. Saturday appointments are available. When your appliance is dying, call Ryan. Ryan's Appliance Repair. Don't just say, oh, well, my dishwasher's not working. Call Ryan, or dryer, or stove, or dishwasher, or refrigerator. Call Ryan. 401-710-7096. 401-710-7096. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're going to come right back. Justin Katz coming up. You don't want to miss this. We're going to talk the latest with Governor Raimondo. More problems for Governor Raimondo. It's all ahead on the John DePietro Show.
Paul Massey Buick GMC South is New England's number one Buick dealer with the area's largest selection and Rhode Island's number one GMC dealer, where every day you'll find the lowest price with our one price guarantee. Right now, lease a 2018 GMC Terrain for $148 a month for 24 months with $1,988 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
So shop Paul Massey, where every vehicle is clearly marked with our lowest one price.
Well, spring has certainly arrived at Rhode Island's number one garden center, PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center, 3688 Quaker Lane in North Kingstown, Rhode Island's number one garden center. Look how beautiful it is outside. Take a ride to PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. It's Steve, it's Debbie, family-run business. You can call them at 295-4399. Now, they're located Quaker Lane in North Kingstown. They're right off Route 4. They are right next door to Allie's Tack Shop. Flowers, trees, shrubs, a full garden center, all locally grown and homegrown. Remember, buy local. Excellent quality, less expensive. Look for their magnificent outdoor display at PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Family owned and operated for over 35 years. They're open 7 days a week until 5 o'clock. Stop in and see them. Steve and Debbie and Junior, what a great job they do. Look for them on Facebook. PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center, Rhode Island's number one garden center. They're worth the ride. Everything you need. Landscape construction, mulch delivery, installation, all the colors. It is so beautiful. Full line of landscape materials, pickup and delivery. They're open 7 days a week. They're open today till 5. Look for the magnificent outdoor display. They're right next door to Allie's Tack Shop. And they're diagonally across from Allie's Donuts. It's PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. John DePietro Show. Good afternoon, one and all. It's Juan. Here I am. It's John DePietro, weekdays, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. AM 1380, 99.9 FM. And it's WNRI. We continue with Justin Katz on this political Monday. You know, Justin, it is amazing. Governor Raimondo is in the Raimondo camp, are obviously in full mode, almost in denial mode at some point. I'm curious your thought on a couple of different things. And one part is that last week, this was pretty extraordinary, where the governor appeared in Washington. She was on another one of her fundraising trips. She went out to California. She was in Washington, D.C. She appeared with the laborers. She is talking about $2 billion in school constructions. Armin Sabatoni said, you know, you couldn't ask for a better partner. The governor said to the laborers, the unions, Laborers International, you know, I have your back, you got mine. The polling numbers show she's still the seventh worst governor rank in the United States with 38%. But that's quite a statement where you have someone who is going forth under the skies to me of schools are not safe and we need to rebuild all the schools, not just patch them, rebuild, $250 bond, and saying to the laborers, you know, I got your back, you got mine. Also announcing a deal with Council 94 that would, in essence, add close to 300 more union state jobs plus raises. I'll tell you, Justin, this is someone who came in under the guise of, you know, being fighting with, well, certainly the teachers and everything because of the pension reform. But I just don't recall ever seeing someone without, I don't know how else to say it, but so clearly in the pocket of public sector unions, and especially the public construction unions, the laborers. It's hard not to see how, you know, she's in favor of the stadium and they would build the stadium. She's in favor of all these road work stuff. They benefit from that. She's in favor of the $250 million bond that could lead to $2 billion. For everything she talks about, you know, that it's for the public good, it always seems to come back to, you don't see her with business people. You don't see her with businesses. It's all with her biggest supporters are the laborers. And, you know, now you have like the Council 94 people of like, what a gift. The number of state workers is about to climb to 15,500.
Right. Yes. And if you watch her series of reforms, you can almost trace the increase of leverage that labor has within her administration. So the first was pension reform, which actually required some reductions in the pensions that public sector employees who had retired were receiving. That was actually, it wasn't enough. I think a lot of it was a bit of a dance, but there was some pinch to them. Then you get road works with the roads and bridges, and that's essentially creating a new revenue source with tolls, basically. And now you've got this, but at least there was, you know, fixing the roads and introducing a new revenue source to help fix the roads. Now you've got just a standard old, you know, we're going to take out hundreds of millions of dollars in new debt to build schools. I haven't seen anything in the plan that helps to ensure that this will not keep happening, where we spend all our money on other things like labor and then don't pay to maintain our infrastructure. It's just a giveaway to them. And it's been in the writing's been on the wall for a long time. When she first started with the roadworks, they were citing as justification an independent report that the Chafee administration had commissioned. And the independent report had said you need more people who can do the higher end work. But happened, you know, managing, drawing, planning. They came in and used that report and they hired a bunch more labor. Union people, and that was the shift that came right at the beginning of her administration. So it is. She's shoring up between that and the nationwide big money donors. She's shoring up the sort of standard Democrat base, or at least base of activist support. And, you know, that it's kind of disappointing to those who thought after pension reform that she would do something differently. But it's been clear, you know, if you can help her political career, you've got a voice in her administration, because that's how you get those millions of dollars in donations and the boots on the ground that she'll get with laborers who want the jobs that come with all this money that's falling out of the sky.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when, you know, you have a deal with Council 94. I remember when they signed pension reform and Michael Downey, head of Council 94, where he was so incensed at what he called was the Raimondo Chafee fist bump after they had achieved that. And, you know, they looked at it as like they're taking money out of people's pockets and their retirements and so forth. But boy, when you have a desperate governor and the deal that they are striking right now with the state workers and everything else. It's funny, Joe Trillo, we spoke to at 12 noon. He was with Chris Sununu, the governor of New Hampshire. New Hampshire has a budget of $6.9 billion. As you know, Rhode Island budget is over $9 billion, Justin. And New Hampshire has 6,000 state employees. And Rhode Island, after this deal, Raimondo is going to raise this now to 15,500, basically adding 300 union state worker jobs. You know, when she was trying to get pension reform passed, her talking point was always about this is a math problem, right? That we have a math problem. Well, boy, that seems to have gone out the window, and it is just full speed ahead of like whatever I can do to get elected. The people to the side. She, at this point, seems almost like, and I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but like dangerous, willing to cut any deal to get reelected.
Well, one could say that it's still just a math problem. The difference is the math problem used to be facing the pension system, and now it's facing her election odds. She needs votes, and that's what she's buying. So the main rationale for the raises was, oh, revenue, all our revenue is coming in a lot higher than we expected, so we've got all this extra money. Well, you know, you could do something like, I don't know, not implement the tolling system. How about a tax reduction? But it's you know, just a quick grab for that opportunity. Here's an opportunity to grab some money and get some votes, because it's there. So we'll just give it in raises. We'll have a promise for that. Or here's a company looking for somewhere to put their headquarters. Okay, let's spend a lot of money to draw them here, and that's an opportunity for me to look good. So it's all part of the same narrative we keep seeing. But it is still a math problem. It's just a different one than she was addressing back when she was treasurer.
You know what's also interesting, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com on this Political Monday. Justin, Buddy Cianci won in 1974. He beat Providence Mayor Joe Dorley, and then he was reelected in 1978. Well, in 1982, he had a very tough election against Frank Darrigan, who then later became a judge. But what Cianci did was basically pave every sidewalk in the city of Providence during the summer of 1982 and into the fall. And the Providence Journal wrote a famous editorial paving his way to re-election, because although it was a hassle at the time and they had no money to do it, by the time mid-October, late October, when Cianci's final pitch to the voters, it was basically, you know, look around. The streets look good. Your sidewalks look good. It was aesthetic. It was something that people could see and say, you know, I got to admit, you know, the roads. Listen, every road, when you put a new thing of, tar down, and every sidewalk when it's repaved. But the Journal basically said he had no money. He moved things around. He was basically writing checks he couldn't cash, but he was paving his way to reelection. Well, look at, lo and behold, last week, Governor Raimondo has this, quote, press conference with Peter Alviti at DOT, announcing the spring construction season is underway, as if it is like opening day at Fenway, Justin. You know, we're going to, you watch, between now and Labor Day, they are going to repave and redo, and it's going to be a total hassle. But in October, and it's going to be a close election. Governor Raimondo is going to look at people on those debates on the stage and look at the people and say, look around the state. Doesn't it look beautiful? It reminds me of this, just on a much larger scale. And it is like we are going to go through hell over the next couple of months with the amount of construction projects. But then she's just going to be able to say, look at how much better the state looks. That's the way I look at it. I'd like to know what you think.
Well, that would be interesting, and it's definitely something to watch for. I could see, though, if that is the plan, lots of ways it could backfire. I mean, not only do you have all these areas that aren't working, like UHIP, the Unified Health Infrastructure Project, where people aren't getting their benefits, things like that aren't working, and things not working has been kind of her storyline. So is paving some roads going to overcome that? I don't know. But also, if you think about, I guess it's one thing in Providence to make things difficult to get around for people. But if you're going to hit Rhode Island, Newport and down in South Shore and all these areas with lots of hassle of getting around during the summer, I don't know if people turn around in October and say, yes, the nice pavement is worth it. I mean, that's the summer is kind of our thing, and it's been a long winter, it seems like. So that may not be quite the strategy that her administration thinks it is if they go that route.
If you're going to do it, I mean, the summertime is to do it, and then when people come back in the fall, they kind of forget it. One last final thing. You know, the UHIP thing, despite what they say, continues to be a mess. It's not getting better. But I've noticed an interesting tact, and I kind of picked up on it on Twitter. I didn't hear all of it, but I saw a quote on NPR where Rhode Island Public Radio, they're almost starting to question the other candidates, like, and I think the quote was, boy, it's easy to criticize Governor Raimondo, you know, she's a pinata with UHIP, but what's your solution to it? You know, almost throwing the onus to them as opposed to holding her accountable. Again, I'm not a candidate, they're not asking me, but I wouldn't even accept the question that way, because that's almost like, okay, all right, so it was a mistake to go into Iraq, but now what's your solution on how we get out of that? There are some times that you can get so deep into something. In I think it was 1914, when there was a captain and they were sailing from England to New York, and he made the decision to sail this brand new trip on its maiden voyage north because they wanted to make up some time and arrive in New York. It was either early or on time, and as a result of that, they hit an iceberg, and the ship was the Titanic. And it's almost as if in the middle of that, if someone were to say, all right, well, you know, it's easy to criticize him now, but what would you do? I mean, to me, there are certain situations, and UHIP is one of them, that to just throw the question to whoever, Patricia Morgan or Trillo or Fung or Giovanni Ferrosi, like, all right, it's easy to criticize her, but what's your solution for it? You know, to me, this thing is such a mess that I don't think there is an easy answer to it. But to take the onus off on her, and that's the way I was interpreting it, like, well, you know, it's easy to criticize her, but what would you do different? Well, it began and ended with the decision that she made, which was to launch that thing. They were told not to launch it. It wasn't ready. She did it anyway. And to me, and Gary Sass was vocal on Twitter about this as well, she, for better or worse, has to face the consequences of what was a Titanic-like decision. I'll give you the final word on that.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that is a good answer for any candidate to start with, and to say, look, she has to be held accountable for this kind of a terrible decision. I mean, she went even so far as to dismantle the old system, not even run them in parallel, so we don't even have that anymore if we wanted to. I think, though, there is some fairness in asking candidates, do you have a better idea? I mean, we just heard that Deloitte has been rehired to continue trying to fix it. You know, the reason is because they're not changing direction. They still want to get it to work, doing what they thought it was going to do, which was make it a welfare mill for people, just to stay on there and get whatever benefits are available to them. The dependency portal, as the Center for Freedom and Prosperity called it at the time when it was implemented or begun, first conceived. But you know, you can go back. So I think that is a good answer. And I'd like to hear some solutions, because maybe there is, I mean, this is how politics ought to work. Maybe there is something that could be done, and some of the candidates can come up with it. The first thing I'd like to hear him say, though, apart from, you know, she needs to be held accountable, is we start to unravel what they're trying to do and just get back to the basics of providing people with the services that they're entitled to, not trying to be this first one-in-a-nation software system. I mean, we might require rebuilding some smaller system that does each one independently, but let's do that. I think that is a viable answer, but I take your point that it does seem to take some of the weight off her when
it does. You know, like, all right, we've all accepted it's tough, but what would you do? You know, and it's tough until you're in there. I mean, who knows what the truth is? I'm not convinced that we're getting the full truth of how long it's going to be, the timetable or anything like that. So to me, it almost takes the trap, because then she could be the expert to say, well, you can't do that, you can't do that. And suddenly she's shooting down other suggestions because she's the ultimate authority. You know, Justin, I always mention you are the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. But I want you to just give a plug of how people can read, you know, learn more about OceanStateCurrent.com, read it, some of the other people. Just give a quick 30-second synopsis of how people can read more about some of the things that you write and some of the other people involved.
Well, obviously, you go to OceanStateCurrent.com. That's where we put all our content. At the top of that page, there's a link for subscribing, friending, and following. That's got all of the different things: Facebook, Twitter, email list, iTunes, whichever way people want to get information. I encourage people to go there and click friend, follow, all of that stuff. And basically, we need people to participate, to read, to comment, to provide us with content, maybe donations if they really want to.
Yes.
That'd be great. One thing that's increasingly clear is Rhode Island needs an alternative source of information. I mean, when things come out, you get a lot of the same stuff. Sometimes one outlet has the better piece than another outlet, but it's a lot of the same ground that's covered, and it's just that same cycling of information that you never get a different perspective,
right,
or an idea of how things might change. And that's why you get these questions like, well, what would you do differently than the governor? Well, you know, let's foster an outlet, which is the Ocean State Current, that will help provide those answers and offer some perspective as we get all the spin from all of the players in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
So that's really the goal, and we're making more and more concerted effort to grow it, so we can do more investigative reporting, do more research, do more multimedia stuff, podcasts, that sort of thing. So first step is always just to read it. We value every reader. Second step, to follow us and maybe participate in comments, and then, you know, help us grow it to be more and more of an alternative, something that can really start to change the way people understand Rhode Island. Because I think, you know, you get the feeling that there are a lot of people in the state who agree with a lot of the views you and I have, but they're either cowed, they're afraid, they don't want to step out there, they just don't want to get involved, it's not worth the headache. Well, we can make that headache go away by making our ideas less obscure and
yes,
making sure that people know they're out there and understand what we're really trying to say, because yeah, we're not, you know, as I'm accused in Tiverton, where I'm active locally, we're not trying to destroy the state. We have good
hardly
ideas.
Hardly, yes.
And if people understood those ideas, we could change the way things are done in the long term. And we need people to participate with us in making sure that other people who don't agree with us start to get wind of what we think, and to see that it's actually not only reasonable, but absolutely 100% guaranteed to be correct.
Yeah. Folks, again, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. He's Justin Katz. Justin, great job. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Look forward to it.
All right, folks, there you go. It's, again, John DePietro. He does a fantastic job. If it were me, I would not even accept the question. This business of, all right, it's easy to criticize the governor with UHIP, but what would you do differently? My answer would be, she shouldn't have flipped the switch. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show, 766-1380. Again, reminder, our friends, stop in and see them. Grow It Green. They're open 7 days a week. Southern New England's indoor garden supply shop. Top name brand equipment. Grow It Green, 122 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Call them at 508-883-GROW. They're open 7 days a week. Grow It Green, Southern New England's only 5-star rated indoor growing supply store. 20 years experience. Consultations are available. 122 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. It's Monday. It is the John DePietro Show. I can't think of a better person to check in with than our friend Sal from Metro PCS. Good afternoon, Sal.
There you are, JD. Good afternoon.
What perfect weather for people to be out and about upgrading their phones.
That's right. Right now, MetroPCS, we have the best unlimited deal going on in wireless. You're going to get two lines of unlimited 4G LTE data for just $80, period. Plus, on top of that, you're going to get two free smartphones with 32 gigabytes of memory when you switch to MetroPCS. So right now, only MetroPCS is going to give you twice the memory on any free phone that's out there. You're going to have unlimited 4G LTE data. You're going to have more for pictures, more for videos, more apps like Simple Radio, TuneIn Radio to listen to the show, apps like Hulu to watch Lumen Towers, your favorite show, my favorite show. You can do whatever you want with these smartphones. You can do much, much more with these awesome smartphones with MetroPCS. And on top of that, you're going to be enjoying them on a nationwide reliable network with MetroPCS. So if you've been thinking about switching, you've been putting it off, the weather's been not so good, today's a beautiful day. There's time. It's the perfect opportunity to get out and take advantage of our great offers with MetroPCS.
Folks, there's never been a better time. Upgrading your phone is a game changer. It's a life changer. Sal will walk you through everything. And now is the perfect time. So you've put it off. What I want people to understand is going forward, you're going to want to be able to do more with your phone. So you're cheating yourself. It's like not even realizing you're in a bungalow and you could be living in a mansion if you'd upgrade your phone with Sal and MetroPCS. 5 easy-to-get-to locations, 1027 Cranston Street in Cranston. That is right next door to the Rite Aid. You can also find Sal and his great staff, 989 Manton Avenue in Providence, 1852 Smith Street in North Providence, right next door to Salon d'Italia, 1503 Atwood Avenue in Johnston, next to Johnston Town Hall, and then also 1553 Plainfield Pike in Johnston. And Sal, not only to you and your staff, Anthony, everybody, Winnie, are they terrific, but you'll even make appointments with people and walk them through things yourself.
That's exactly right. I mean, I love when people do that. We did that when we switched you over to MetroPCS. You know, a lot of times people can't come out at certain times throughout the week. They'll say, hey, Sal, I want to come down, you know, for example, like producer Rob, I want to come in at 6:45 a.m., whatever it may be. You know, certain people have different things, different schedules, but I'm more than happy to help people work around their schedule to help them get switched over. And then when you do come and get switched over, it's not, here's the phone, see you later. It's, what do you like to do on your phone? Let's get you set up. In your situation, we had to transfer a lot of numbers, a lot of contacts, a lot of pictures. You know, we got all those switched over for you. So everybody has a unique situation, and everybody, you know, has different apps and needs they want on their phone, and that's what we're here for, and we'll help people out and help people make the switch.
Folks, he is the best. Thank you, Sal. Sal and MetroPCS, 332-5051. 332-5051. It's Sal and MetroPCS. This portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by our friends at K's. Whether it's lunch or dinner, stop in and see them. 1013 Cass Avenue in Woodsocket. They're right across from CVS. Call them at 762-9675. And what I love about K's, you're wondering what's on the menu? Open up the napkin. There it is. How about a nice steak sandwich, a roast beef, a corned beef, imported ham, lobster roll is delicious. The lounge is terrific, delicious food. They're waiting for you at K's. You know, right now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is actually giving a press briefing at the White House. I want to tap into this just a little bit if we can, because they're touching on the Comey memos, I believe. Hold on. Nope. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get that straightened out. I'm not sure why that is not working. It should be working. We'll get that figured out a little bit. I'm not exactly sure why. Boom, boom, boom. 3B. I'm at 3B. And for whatever reason, it is not. Let me try it one more time. Nope. And let me try this. No. All right. That's quite all right. All right. Well, she is talking, and we'll get to that as well. You know, folks, as we talk about the UHIP situation, again, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. It begins and ends. There's no one else to blame but Governor Raimondo. This is, after all, Gina's Island.
left and right back, and you'll hear a tale of the governor and you hip. She slammed them in a press conference, and then they paid for her trip. The state's in a mighty predicament, no leadership at all. We're not really sure who should take the blame, but it's Gina for sure. It's Gina for sure. Done enough. The whole state has a cost. If not for the John DePietro show, Rhode Island would be lost. Rhode Island would be lost. So listen in each day, my friend. He's sure to make you smile. With the governor, the speaker too, the rollout plan and all the lies. The annoying part, not sure they can implement the plan. Here in Queen is a is the tale of the rollout plan. It may take a long, long time. We'll have to make the best of things. It's an uphill climb.
There is our friend, the crooner at large, Tim Brooks, singing about Queen is R.I., and it is. Well, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. I think the Ken Block situation is very, very interesting, that dynamic. We're going to have to wait and see exactly what happens with that, whether or not he's going to jump in for another round, run for governor. And then also this business of whether or not Matt Brown going to run as a Democrat, or is he going to challenge her is he going to run as an independent, or is he going to run as a Democrat and challenge her? It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Remember, you can always email me, john@depietro.com. john@depietro.com. Folks, remember, if you're ever in an accident, pick up the phone and call West Fountain Auto Body. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. It's your vehicle. It's West Fountain Auto Body. Call them 272-3340, West Fountain Auto Body, located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's West Fountain Auto Body. They're going to work for you, not the insurance company. Did someone hit your car? You know, it's amazing. Whenever you leave your home, you get behind the wheel. Maybe you're going home to work or going to work. No matter what happens, whenever you get behind the wheel of your car or vehicle, you just never know what's going to happen out there. You have people texting and driving. You have drunk drivers. You have all kinds of people. If you're ever in an accident, whether it's a small dent or a nearly totaled vehicle, you can depend on West Fountain Auto Body. 272-3340. 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body. They're the best. You can depend on West Fountain Auto Body. They're going to work for you, not the insurance company. West Fountain Auto Body. I brought friends there, family. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. Since 1927, showroom-like condition with West Fountain Auto Body. 272-3340. Remember, automotive painting, refinishing, it's an art. Without question, it'll look brand new. Call West Fountain Auto Body today. 272-3340. 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body. Folks, it's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We'll have more on the race for governor tomorrow. Now, don't forget, you can always go to WNRI.com and you can listen to our podcast. And then also follow me on both Facebook and Twitter. It's John DePietro Show. And it always begins with check out DePietro.com, DePietro.com, the official website of the Independent Man. Listen, enjoy this beautiful Monday. The John Dion Show is next. He's waiting in the wings right here on AM 1380 and 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI.
WNRI Woonsocket.